Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Son of Sam Chronicles. We have a new episode for you here today. I'm Rocker Mike. To my left right there is Rob Rossi. And then we have Chris Jr. on the bottom. How you doing, Chris?
What's up, guys?
All right. Today we're going to be talking about something quite different. Not exactly Son of Sam directly. A lot of people question, a big question you get is how come everything stopped after David Berkowitz was arrested in August of 77. Well, you know, there's a lot of theories about that, but there's also a very interesting murder that happened in October of 77 that we're going to talk about today. Chris has a lot of information on it. It's the murder of Suzette Rodriguez, also known as Maria Cortina. She was murdered October 14th, 1977. Which is, as you know, 2 months after David Berkowitz was arrested. The reason this is even relevant in any way is because there's connections to the Process Church, which is always in the ether when you talk about Son of Sam, and Untamaya Park, which is also always in the ether. I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Chris, and you can just get into this and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. When I started to really research this aspect of, the larger case with regards to Son of Sam, this one kind of hit home with me. My wife was pregnant at the time with my daughter. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, if you're a man and you have a daughter, it starts to soften you up a little bit. Suzette Rodriguez was a young girl. I think she was 22 at the time. It's really sad when someone so young, regardless of what they were involved in, don't ever get a chance to get a second chance. You know, as we go through this, I think we'll touch on the fact that at the time of her murder, she was trying to get with some family down in Florida and kind of get out of the fray, I guess you could say. In any event, as Mike stated, the murder took place on a Friday night in October 14th, 1977. It didn't happen in an area that was heavy crime or anything like that. It happened in Elmsford, New York. Elmsford, New York's a pretty quiet town, industrial to a certain extent.
How far is it from Yonkers?
It is a very short drive from Yonkers.
Okay.
What makes Elmsford a very significant place, I would say, in the history of conspiracy, is it sits basically on the Sawmill River Parkway. But there's also on-ramps or connections very easily to the Cross Westchester part, Cross Westchester Expressway, 287, and also 87. So there's some lore in the area that, you know, there would be quite a bit of CIA activity due to the proximity to all those different major highways, the proximity to New York City, and the proximity out of New York into Connecticut. The Cross Westchester actually, it does what it said, what it's named as. It goes across Westchester County.
It's called Cross County, right?
Well, no, the Cross County is different. That's no. Off the Hutch. Oh. Cross Westchester connects, basically starts at the Long Island Sound and finishes at the Hudson, or starts at the Hudson and finishes. Yeah, right. So you could get to Jersey very easily from there. You can get to New York City very easily from there. You can get across the county and get into Connecticut very easily. So I don't know the specifics of the CIA lore, but there definitely is.
Well, when you say CIA lore, you mean like legends? Like
legend? Yeah, like I would say maybe a bagman or something like that would do a drop off or a pickup in this area.
How'd you hear about that? Just curious.
A really good friend of mine actually, who got me into the Son of Sam, Ultimate Evil. I curse his name every day. I'm only kidding. He's a very good friend of mine, dear friend of mine, actually. And you know, when we were talking about, I was talking about Elm Street. I'm like, you know, it's so weird that this murder took place where it did. It's just such a quiet area. And he's like, yeah, it is quiet, but don't forget. And I don't know. Or he said, I don't know if you know this, but there was some CIA activity there back in the day because of the proximity to all these different places and so forth. Okay. I could probably find out more about it. And maybe we could do a show on it one day. Who knows?
Maybe.
Nonetheless, really a quiet neighborhood. Interestingly enough, at one time, David Berkowitz, I believe, had a he had a sheet metal worker's job in Elmsford, in the industrial area.
Right.
There. The murder itself, it's just so crazy how this happens. It took place on South Lawn Avenue in Elmsford. She was shot three times, point blank range. I believe they were all headshots.
Three.
And it happened on the next door neighbor's lawn of the chief of police of Elmsford at the time.
Okay.
So this case had, when it happened, had some notoriety as a result, as you can imagine.
Sure.
It hit every local newspaper. You know, there was a little bit of controversy with it, due to the fact that originally they thought her name was Maria Cortina. The reason for this was she was caught shoplifting. In Yonkers. And at that time, it's really weird. This is the craziest thing too. Especially if you go back to the first video we did together, guys. She gave an address of 84 Court Street in Brooklyn, New York.
Right.
She was from the Bronx, right?
Right.
84 Court Street sits right in Brooklyn Heights.
It does. Yeah, I know it. I know the area.
You know, and that's one thing that I could never solve. I went through every tenant I could find in that building at you know, as far
back. Is it a residential building?
I believe it's a 15 unit residential building, or at least at one time it was.
Okay. Probably walk up.
Yeah. I remember probably 8 months ago, I went through some data that gives you, you know, past residents. I couldn't find anything to connect her to this apartment building. The weird thing is of all the addresses in the world that she could give in New York, in the Bronx, Yonkers, anywhere in Westchester, Queens, she chose Brooklyn.
Well, that is strange, but let's give it a reason why we're saying this, because maybe someone didn't see that last show.
So,
there was a strong occult presence in Brooklyn, particularly Brooklyn Heights, through the 1970s, right?
Yes.
Okay. So go ahead. What were you going to say?
What I was going to say is, I mean, you guys are from the boroughs, right?
Right.
If you live in a Bronx, it's a good chance you're never going to Brooklyn. You may never go to Brooklyn in your life.
People in Brooklyn don't want to go to the Bronx. They don't even want to go to Queens.
Right. Exactly. So it's like, because, I mean, you know, a lot of people that live in the five boroughs, especially I would say Bronx and Manhattan, a lot of those people don't even drive. You know, they're taking subways.
Especially back then.
Especially back then.
Yeah.
So I just find that address to be very interesting.
Were you able to find anything, any kind of interesting person living in that building at the time?
Did
the records go back that far?
A really good buddy of mine, and fellow researcher, we did everything we could to figure out why she gave that address, and we could not figure anything out. I'm still miffed by it.
Did she give this address when she got arrested for shoplifting?
Yes, she gave that address.
Yeah,
and Maria Cortina as a name.
Maybe right. But her real name is Suzette Rodriguez. That's her
real name. Real name is Suzette Rodriguez. That's where she. That's what she was born as.
Okay.
You know, Puerto Rican family from the Bronx. She had family in Florida. At the time of the murder, she was looking to get down to Florida. When she was shot, and this is really what messed me up, was the height and weight. 5'4", 84 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's a little thing.
Yeah. I mean, this girl was living on the fringes of society. I mean, there's no way to explain that. I mean, even my mother, she was 5'5", 5'5" nothing. And she, you know, in
she's
her
age, over 100 pounds.
She probably weighed like when she was in really, really good shape, like running every day and walking and exercising, she might have been like 99 to 100 pounds. And she didn't look like a thin rail at that weight because of her height. But
no, you know, I mean, my wife is 5'4".
Right.
Right. And if she was 85 pounds, she would be emaciated.
Yeah. So you can only begin to believe. Begin to, you know, wonder what she was involved in. What I've heard.
You know what, Chris, I don't mean to cut you off for a second, but you know what that area had, which a lot of people don't know?
What?
They used to have a lot of botanicas.
You're talking about downtown. You're talking about Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, the area had a lot of botanica, where people would buy candles, stuff to do spells. But there were a lot of santeros. Santeria was big. So she's Hispanic. It's pretty much a good chance that she might have been involved with Santeria, and there might have been something they were doing, you know, ritual in one of the apartments. There could have been a Spanish woman there. They would do ritual, you know, like kill chickens and put the blood, and they read each other's cards and so that area of Brooklyn probably had a lot of Spanish people. They probably had a lot of botanicas, because I remember my mother going to Brooklyn to the Bronx to botanica just to pick up certain statues and stuff, because my mother is pretty much she's a santera, so she does weird stuff.
Yeah. Well,
now I noticed in the outline here that you gave me, Chris, that it said here she's 5'4", 85 pounds, but she was wearing a snake ring, coiled snake ring,
right,
and a nameplate with the name Suzanne on it when she died.
Yes.
Now, one reporter went this far to suggest that she was dressed like a gypsy, or at least that she was wearing gypsy-style jewelry. I don't know if gypsy is the right word to say anymore. I don't know, but back then, that's
it's
what they said.
It's pretty much Santera stuff. Santeros were that.
Yeah, they would look like that.
My mother got the snake ring with the head heading in, so it's you're pointing at your enemy, so you're giving them the venom.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Here's what I can confirm. Interesting. Here's what I can confirm. Suzette Rodriguez, at this time, she's mentioned in The Ultimate Evil, just so everyone knows.
Yeah, she is.
But she was not known about. She was not known about or on Maury Terry's radar at this time. But a writer at the Yonkers Herald Statesman basically said, this kind of sounds like this girl had some, you know, relationship with the occult, right? Right. So this is not, you know, Maury Terry coming up with, you know, a web that leads back to, you know, the Process Church or some weird witch group or something like that. This is just a writer who has seen a lot of crimes, seen a lot of shootings.
Right.
Has written about a lot of stuff related to, you know, less than fortunate people, I guess you could say. And, you know, that was his first thought. You know, I always say the first thought is always the right thought. But, you know, I mean, as we get through this, I think some of the stuff will start to take form a little bit. The police did say that she had some affiliation with a Spanish Harlem drug crew.
How did they know that?
That I am not sure of. I would imagine they had CIs and they had snitches on the street. I would venture to believe that when she got arrested, she probably wasn't alone the first time. They could have went back to that person she was with. There's so many different ways they could have obtain that information, especially if she had a presence in Westchester County, which it looks like she did, based on the shoplifting charge. The the overall case just basically goes cold. There's just, you know, even with the fact that it happened on across, you know, next door to the chief of police's house, you know, they probably had, I learned this from another chief that, that the county police, which was the sheriff's department, had some hand in the case as well. That was Chief Singer. He's actually thanked by Maury Terry in The Ultimate Evil. Right. I spoke to him several times. He just passed away. I would have loved to have chatted with him one more time, but he just died, unfortunately. Wow.
Let me ask you something before you continue. The actual three shots that she took.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind of bullets they were?
It was a 38.
Okay. So that's not a 44, obviously.
It's not a 44, but I don't think it really matters. I mean,
It doesn't necessarily. I mean, there's some interesting people surrounding this case that kind of tie in.
Right.
So I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. So and that I was kind of using that as a segue to get to the next point. You know, we all know the first version of Ultimate Evil came out in 87. There were additional volumes written. In 1993, Maury Terry gets acquainted with, I guess, some people who hung out at the park. This is a controversial figure. If you're someone who squats in your girlfriend's house in Riverdale in the Bronx, but that guy's name is Billy the Artist. Billy the Artist put up basically drew a bunch of sketches of people that he knew from the park. Two of those people were one Suzette Rodriguez, the one murdered in Elmsford that night.
Now, hold on a second. That we've seen this picture a couple of times already. Top left looks like a snapshot.
Yep.
What is this sketch?
That's a sketch of her. Now, it's definitely a caricature of her. But if you look at the angle of her eyebrows, you look at the angle of her eyebrows. If you look at the lusciousness of her lips, and the slenderness of her shoulders. There is some pretty good resemblance here to.
The hair length is different, obviously.
Well, the hair length really isn't different. I think if you zoom into that smaller photo of Suzette, you'll see that she's wearing her hair in a bun.
Oh, so she pulls it back sometimes. Okay,
right. And you know, Rob could attest. You know, Puerto Rican girls, you know, they could go thick and wavy, or they can go super curly. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, I know, I know.
Another person that was sketched as being someone who was at the park was a guy by the name of Ken from Australia in the Maury Terry book. He was known as Father Dominic, I believe, or Brother Dominic in the Process Church of Final Judgment. The chatter about the two of them. The man on the screen and Suzette Rodriguez was that, you know, Ken probably could have been either a handler of the cult in Untermeyer or a recruiter for the process, and maybe through the Brooklyn Heights Magical Child Gift Shop or the Warlock.
That would be the Warlock Shop.
The Warlock Shop or the Magical Child Gift Shop in the city. Mm-hmm. He may have heard about the cult. And decided to take a.
Yeah. By the time this happened, it would have been Magical Child. The Warlock Shop would have been gone.
Right. So, you know, basically, you know, Suzette and Father Dominic were linked together, or Brother Dominic. Were they
linked together romantically?
Yes.
Okay.
Apparently, he was very abusive towards her. That's why. They have those tears in her eyes. From what I understand.
Is there a tear in her eye in that sketch? Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. The little streaks going down. Yeah.
From what I understand, the guy was pretty abusive towards her. You know, a lot of that is hearsay. So I'm gonna come out flat and say that. I don't have any proof of that. All I have is hearsay that those two were linked together. The weird thing is this, is in 77, neither of these two people were on Maury Terry's radar. In 87, when he wrote the initial book, I don't think they were on his radar. In a post he wrote on Facebook, he basically says he didn't know who either of these two people were until 1993 when he met Billy the Artist.
Okay, and Billy the Artist, as everybody knows, is the guy who sketched Howell, right? Who might
be not Howell, Mr. Real Estate.
Mr. Real, who they think might be Howell or somebody else. We're not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't believe that Howell was ever on Maury's radar as Mr. Real Estate.
Yeah.
But
it's just supposedly a resemblance.
But people that create multiple account names and argue with one another about who I am and what I do on these videos seems to think that Howell was Mr. Real Estate.
Yeah, I mean, there's no definite of that. Okay,
right. No, there's no definite of it.
Right, right. But Billy, getting back to Billy the Artist, he is the one that made the sketch, and he also sketched that picture of Suzette.
Yes, he sketched both of those photos exactly.
Now, were they sketched specifically for Maury Terry?
I believe my understanding of it is that Billy the Artist was hanging out at the park, was already an artist in 77, and was sketching these people out on his free time.
Okay,
at the time that he was hanging out there, I forget the style of art that he was doing, but it was a famous style for that time. He was mimicking a famous artist of that time in that style. That's why a lot of the drawings that you get from Untermeyer are, you know, almost caricatures of the people he's drawing.
Right.
You know, it's my understanding on Billy the Artist, and I've confirmed this, is that he was a street artist. He did exist. Maury Terry didn't invent him. A lot of people suggest that that is the truth. I have reason to believe otherwise. I will say that the street artist that I know that's confirmed that he knew that guy, you know, is a little bit of a nut job. But most street artists are nut jobs. and I don't mean that in any disrespect, but I've been around Lee Quinones. I've been around a lot of big time graffiti artists, and they're quite the characters. I think that's why they're great artists, to be honest.
So basically, Billy the Artist approached Maury Terry and said something about this.
Yeah, I don't know how Billy the Artist and Maury Terry came into contact. I really don't know the answer to that. Mm-hmm. I don't care. The guy Billy the Artist, who kind of reminds me of Mustache Pete, he decided to go on that History Channel or A&E documentary and put his name out there and put his face out there and say that what he was saying was true. I would never go on TV to lie. I don't know that they got paid any type sum of money to do that. I know that this day and age, if you're asked to be on a documentary, you generally don't get paid for that. It doesn't appear he wanted any major notoriety because he didn't use his real name. I don't know what the point is. I don't think Maury Terry had a lot of money to throw around at that time either, to get this guy to just say whatever he wanted to say and then make these drawings. So, I mean, look, we could spend time on the controversy all day. I don't think it's worth it.
No.
I'd
like to know more about this Dominic character.
Yeah. So, you know, Ken from Australia was someone I always wanted to talk to.
Right.
And I've talked to a few people that were either in the process or at least, you know, friends of the process as I've been researching. And Ken from Australia was an interview that I did because I'm not the FBI. I'll give you my source and method on this because it was a long shot that I get this guy to talk. I know other people have reached out to him before and he's kind of kept the conversation to a minimum, but I was able to actually have a lengthy conversation with him. Basically, what I told him was I was a true crime writer. I let him know I lived in Westchester County, and I was just looking at some unsolved cases that took place. I think this case was interesting enough where someone who is writing about local true crime would want to write about it. And I think he bought that. So when I approached him about it, I basically said, look, I'm not working for the police, which is true. I'm not, I don't want to. I'm not trying to do their work. I don't think that you're guilty of murdering anybody. But your name did come up as knowing a person who was murdered, and her case is still going unsolved after all these years. I basically said the same thing to him what I said earlier on. This case hit home with me, and that's why I was really interested in it. He's an older guy, but he's got all his wits. And, you know, when I brought the first name up, I said, did you know Suzette Rodriguez? No, I can't say I know Suzette Rodriguez. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what about maybe you know her as her under her alias? And he said, well, what is that? I was like, Maria Cortina. He goes, can you spell that? I was like, yeah, Cortina. He's like, no, I don't know her. I'm like, okay. And he goes, well, what happened to her? I was like, so I went through the whole story. And he goes, well, how did my name come into this? I was like, well, I was like, there was a book written. There was your name came up as someone that knew her. And he goes, well, what was the book? I was like, it's called The Ultimate Evil. He goes, I never heard of that one. He goes, who wrote it? I was like, a guy by the name Maury Terry. He goes, how do you spell Mr. Terry's last name? I was like, this guy's got to be kidding. I was like, look, I was like, you know, you're in this book. My name gets mentioned a lot because I was involved with a church. I was like, no, you were involved with the Process Church of Final Judgment. And he goes, yes. He goes, yeah, I was involved with them. I was like, look, I don't really believe all the stuff that's said about them. You know, I have a dog myself. I love what they're doing for dogs out there in Utah and so forth. And this is an interesting thing about it is he seemed really jealous about the success they had. He was like, yeah, they did really well for dogs, but they did really well for themselves too. It made sure that I knew that they did well for themselves, meaning financially.
Interesting comment. Yeah.
Right. And ooh. I was like, all right. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm sure they make a lot of money. I mean, you know, there's a lot of money in not-for-profits.
people joining the cult, man, they give all their money to the cult.
That's right. But, you know, we went further. He said he had been back there to see them and keeps in contact with them and so forth. And
to this day.
Yeah, to this day. In any event, you know, we're talking a little bit more about we're kind of, it's like one of those situations where he knows I know that he's bullshitting me and vice versa. I think he kind of figured out at that point, like, all right, this guy's calling me because he knows about the book and he's really just trying to solve some aspect of the Son of Sam case, right? In any event, I never bring up David Berkowitz's name in this entire thing. And I asked him, I'm like, why would somebody put you in the park and then sketch you and have you on an A&E documentary? And he was like, I don't know David Berkowitz. I was like, I never asked you if you knew David Berkowitz.
Oh, he just said it like that.
Okay. I was like, I never asked you if you even knew the guy. I never thought you knew the guy. But now I think you might know the guy. You know, in my head, I'm saying that.
Yeah.
In any event, you know, he said, look, he basically was like one of those, like, hey, look, kid, you know, he goes, hey, look, you know, I had a cousin that died and he never solved their case. Some cases just go unsolved forever. He's like, it's really not worth it for you to be digging this type of stuff up, you know. He didn't say it in those words. You know, he said it in a more articulate Australian-esque fashion, but that was the gist of it.
Yeah.
Similar to my interview with James Donovan Jr., you know, it was weird in a sense where they both acted shocked about them, their names even being involved in any of this. But I know that
they knew about it. You know, it's almost like a
yeah. And yeah. the worst thing with James Donovan was he was believable up until the fact that he told me he worked for the police. And then when I did all the check on the police stuff, he never worked for the police. You know, and so it's like, okay, I believed you a little bit. Now I don't believe you at all, because if you're telling me one lie, you're telling me 50, you know?
And just so people remember, that's a throwback to when we first started having Chris on, and he was talking about Mr. Real Estate possibly being James Donovan, which we unfortunately never really got to the bottom of, which is fine. I mean, there's so many holes and shouldn't say holes. There's so many question marks in this case. You know, sometimes things just, you end up on a dead end right there.
Right. I mean, here's the problem with Donovan is he's so old that he predates real technology. You know, if he stayed alive maybe another 5 years, we'd have so much more on the guy.
Yeah.
But he died just before technology really exploded, I feel like.
Right, in the mid-90s.
Yep.
Before the internet. Yeah, I hear you.
You know, and that's kind of the shitty part of all of this. I mean, I hit other dead ends on this. There was this is anecdotal and we're not even really supposed to be talking about that, but you know, there's a process member who was from the same area as Donovan's. And I thought for sure that was the link. And I called that guy and I did everything I could to make him understand that I did not care about the process church. I told him I was writing a story on former football players from the high school I played football at. And he knew, he named every single big football player in high school from the area in that time period. And I know all of them because of my father and the war stories they told, him and his friends. I asked him, I was like, did you know Sonny Donovan, who's a great football player at Rye High School? And he was like, during the time period he was playing at Rye Neck. He said, I don't know. He's like, nah, I don't even know who that is. I didn't know a lot of people from Rye. I was like, I mean, I have to believe that, right? I really do. It's something that's bothering me. It's been bothering me for a while. And I'm not saying that James Donovan isn't Mr. Real Estate or that's totally over. But as of right now, I don't have anything to support that he is, right? I don't have anything to support he isn't. I don't have anything to support that he is, really. I do have support to say that his son's a liar. That's it.
Well, at least he lied about his career. We know.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, that interview was with Ken though, was pretty fun. It, you know, as you could tell, there was a lot of back and forth. But when he told me he didn't know David Berkowitz and I didn't even ask him,
it sounds a little defensive to me.
It sounds really stupid, actually, for him. I mean, this guy had me spell Untermeyer Park out. He had me spell Yonkers. He had me spell every fucking thing.
But, you know, he doesn't know how to spell that, but he definitely didn't know Berkowitz. But he doesn't know how to spell those. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Chris. What is the connection with Suzette Rodriguez, the Unicorn Pub, okay, and other things going on in Untermeyer?
All right. So before I could get there, I got to just say, after that interview with Ken, I had to do some more research on the guy. I probably should have done this research before I talked to him, but I didn't realize that he had a lot of writings on the internet. And what I found out was this guy was like really into the gypsy lifestyle, specifically Hispanic gypsies. He had a Puerto Rican, he dated Puerto Rican girls. He was married to a Puerto Rican woman. He spent time in Puerto Rico. And he was also involved in chemical engineering and physics. Why the physics things matter, we can get to in a second. But, you know, when you go back to what we said originally, you have a Puerto Rican girl from the Bronx. I mean, if you look at her photo and you don't see that she's Puerto Rican, I mean, let me rephrase that. Stevie Wonder can see she's Puerto Rican, right? You know, the gypsy garb, here's the thing. One of the biggest issues in the Son of Sam right now is who's being honest, right? Is Maury Terry's stuff a crock of shit? You guys know I don't believe that. I don't believe that one bit. But there are a lot of people that are starting to feel that way. There is one person in particular who I won't name that you know, says that on a pretty consistent basis. But Maury Terry didn't make that up, right? He didn't make any of these facts up about any of it. And for some reason, while they're coincidences at best right now, they're still there. And it's something that, you know, I don't think should go left unsaid.
Well, it's, you know, if something smells, you know, if there's fire, if there's smoke, there could be fire. So you know, I you can't dismiss these things even if it goes unsolved right now.
Right. Now the main question is, why would you want to murder Suzette?
Yeah, why murder her? What's the point?
If she was a part of the Son of Sam cult, right?
If she was.
Right. Well, I could tell you right now, she was 84 pounds and 5'4". What are the odds that this girl had a drug problem? Pretty high. They're pretty high. I mean, I'm not saying,
you know, if you're on coke or crystal meth or something, you're going to get
heroin.
Even heroin, you're going to get, yeah, because you don't eat. Yeah.
Right.
So probably not crystal meth. I don't think it was that big.
He also only weighed 84 pounds. And to get put into their head, that's like,
yeah, crazy.
Well, that's the end of you.
So what girl, now this is pretty important. I probably should have talked about this earlier. What girl is going to be in her car with three other guys in a very quiet residential neighborhood in Elmsford? Not many, not that far away from home.
Plus, also right next door to the police chief's house.
Something tells me that her connection to the drug crew was she might have been escorting. That's what I really believe, and that's just me using my instincts. I think the setup was for her was that, hey, we got to take you to go see a John in a residential neighborhood, you know, up in Westchester somewhere, whatever. And basically, you know, the way it was said is she was thrown out of the car and shot in the head. It was her car.
So what happened to the car?
The car, interestingly enough, ended up on Morris Avenue in the South Bronx. We're going to get into that.
Quite a bit away.
Yeah. So there was a place that a lot of these cult members hung out at. And it was in, I guess you would call it the southwestern part of Yonkers. It was called the Unicorn Pub. The guy that owned it was a guy by the name of Robert Taco Grady.
I know that name.
He's a pedophile. I believe he was, you know, of the homosexual lifestyle. He liked other men. He liked the company of other men. He's talked about in the Ultimate Evil. His name Taco Grady isn't mentioned. He's called Robert in the Ultimate Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the story is him, Berkowitz, and I think Michael Carr went to the Candlelight Inn. They had a little bit of a tussle or something to that effect, and they were thrown out of there. When they left, they fired shots at the building and the building next door. Again, there's controversy on this. A good friend of the show, of us, I guess you could say, Paul, Neo, he followed up on the Candlelight and basically they told him nothing ever happened.
Right.
You know, I have a source who grew up over there, and knew that place very well. The Candlelight Inn is known for its wings. It's really a family friendly type place now. But in the 70s, it was more of a tavern. Outlaw bikers would hang out there, you know, get a little rowdy.
More of a rougher crowd.
It was a lot more of a rougher crowd back then. Exactly. Right. Today it's a family friendly place. You know, I would venture to believe that the owner probably didn't want any of those old bad stories coming back in the 21st century.
Right.
Because back then, bad publicity might have been good publicity, but bad publicity today brings the weirdos back in. You know, then there's more reporters are asking questions.
Bad Yelp reviews.
Right. You don't want that kind of notoriety for a place. You know, another interesting tidbit about that area is same source was at a dinner, and he called me pretty late at night. Generally, he doesn't do that, but he called me late. And I was like, you're not going to believe what I just found out. First off, he told me that Donald Singer died, who was the chief of police in that area, who you know, he basically lent out Jerry Buck out to Maury Terry to investigate this case, was thanked in the Ultimate Evil. He passed away, but there was a cop in that area that was, you know, just a patrolman back then. And what he said was, there's a cemetery, like, I think across the street or right near Candlelight. It's like a 5 minute, it's like a 2 minute walk.
Yeah.
That cemetery in the late 70s, 77 in particular, had a lot of animal sacrifices in it. A lot. Like, it was like he was going there all the time for animal sacrifices. And it's just weird how, like, this crew is said to be in one place and there's animal sacrifices, you know, on Altamira Park. And then you're at the Candlelight and there's a cemetery and they're doing animal sacrifices. Like, yeah, it is, you know,
that's crazy.
Right. And you know, I mean, it gets weirder and weirder. Going back to Taco Grady. So the cult members hung out at his place, the Unicorn Pub, right? The Unicorn Pub was, you guys, you know, Rocker Mike, man, you would have loved this place. It was like a big time rock bar for Westchester County at that time. A lot of big time local bands would play there. You know, interestingly enough, they had a witch's night once a week. A lot of people who say Taco Grady had nothing to do with the cult and nothing to do with Untermeyer and all this stuff, it's all bullshit, because for years the guy was throwing rock festivals at Untermeyer Park.
Yeah, Untermeyer Park, right.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a hangout for sure. But it was also a hangout for an infamous and still active street gang from the Bronx. I'm not going to name them because they're still active. But if anyone wants the name and wants to talk about it, you know, reach out to Mike or me and, you know, I'll get you the information you need. They were an interesting type of gang. They would wear Nazi garb. These are Spanish guys mainly, wearing Nazi garb. You know, like they would have the patches, like Nazi patches. They had swastikas. They had names for like high ranking members, like Gestapo. I mean, I wish you could make this shit up.
You can make it up.
You know, the Unicorn Pub was, it was in an area as well where another person who was said to be involved in the club, the cult, was from. Her name was Suzanne Conway.
Mm-hmm.
When Suzette was murdered, she had a necklace on that didn't say Suzette, it said Suzanne.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's really starting to fit.
And that's from the police report?
That's from the police report. It's in the news article.
In the news article. So, right, the nameplate said Suzanne. Her name is Suzette. Right. Or also it could be Maria Cortina.
Suzanne and Taco Grady lived in the same neighborhood.
Are you saying it's the same girl?
What I'm saying is that she probably had that necklace from Suzanne Conway. That's what I'm going to go ahead and say. Because everything else is fitting, right? So this gang that was mainly in the South Bronx had a set in that same part of Yonkers. There's multiple newspaper articles on this. And it's I've got good information that says the Unicorn Pub was their main spot. It was a place they hung out at.
Right.
Morris Avenue, which was where they hung out. If you take Morris Avenue north, let's say you start at the very, let's say south, let's say you start north, right? And you go south. Morris Avenue takes you right to the Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
So things are starting to come together in my mind as I'm researching this. And, you know, I guess my final conclusion on it is that this gang was into Nazi occultism. Nazi occultism is all over the cult. We've talked about it. Lavenda has talked about it. It's in The Ultimate Evil. Police have talked about it. It's well known that this is a part of their theology somehow. Even the Process Church has some Nazi-esque looking, you know, symbols, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah, with the four parts almost looks like a swastika.
So,
yeah.
Right. It looks like the gang that she was affiliated with, either knowingly or unknowingly, killed Suzette. You know? And I think somehow it was set.
Well, it couldn't be unknowingly, Chris. I mean, three shots.
No. Knowingly or unknowingly killed it as a part of a cleanup for the cult.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So they may have been, you know, someone may have said she was a snitch, but it was
could have been drug related, right?
Right. Could have been, or they could have set her up something drug related, or there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat. But the fact that, and this was something that kind of switched over in my mind a couple times, is their interest in Nazi occultism as a gang makes me kind of believe that they had more of a better understanding that there was a cult operating out of Untermeyer. That Taco kind of explains why they would hang out at Taco Grady's bar. You know, South Bronx and Southwest Yonkers are very far from each other.
Yeah, you're going out of your way if you're going up there.
You're going out of your way. So there was some link to the Unicorn Pub for all of these people.
Could have been drugs.
City, but listen, the city of Yonkers had no shortage of drug dealers. That's the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they were going up to, like, you know, Bumblefuck, you know, Putnam County, because, and they were the only game in town.
Yeah.
There's probably 40 drug dealers in that 5-block radius back then. Right? I mean, think about it. I mean, it's, something drew them all. You know,
let me ask you a question. What if when she got arrested, maybe she just snitched? She tore on some people just to get out. It could have been something that simple.
There's no doubt in my mind she wanted to get the hell out of there because
someone
interviewed someone and basically said she wanted to go back home to Florida. Oh, not back home to Florida. She wanted to go to Florida to be with her family.
She had family down there.
Right.
And you know what? The other thing she did, there was also a warrant for her arrest because she never appeared to court for that charge.
For the shoplifting.
So there was already a warrant. So pretty much after they got arrested, they realized they saw that there was still a warrant out for her.
How much before her murder was this shoplifting arrest?
It was in July of that year.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, she could have made it down to Florida well before October if she was leaving because of the shoplifting warrant, in my opinion. I think there was something else that was making her want to go to Florida. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, look. I know that the Spanish Harlem drug crew that they're talking about is affiliated with this gang. I can't tell. I'm not going to say how I know that. I know for a fact that it's the same gang.
Okay.
I know that Peter Lavenda said that there was a Spanish drug dealing crew that was also a cultist, or that at least there was a Spanish Harlem crew that was into the occult. I don't know if he said drug dealers. I may be editorializing. I apologize if I am. But I know that people who have studied the occult in New York and knew about the occult in New York knew that there was a presence in Spanish Harlem. These guys just happened to be, you know, infatuated with Nazis. And they're mainly Hispanic. That I don't get. It's not like they're from Argentina.
Well, they're
from Puerto Rico.
In the 70s and even today, if you put on something of Nazi regalia, you know, you could just be looking to be shocking.
But yeah, that's true.
Or intimidating.
That is true. But the more I learn about Nazis, the more I realize that the most sinister thing about them is that their theology was almost as scary as the shit that they did to people. These guys really believed in some weird shit.
No, they were, the hierarchy, we've talked about this many times, the hierarchy of the Nazi Third Reich were all occultists. The SS was based on the occult.
Right.
They believed in, the Thule Society and Crowley and all that. And they believed in, the old Norse gods and all that stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's not a stretch to think that if you're wearing the regalia, you might also be into the occult aspect of it. You're hanging out in Untermeyer Park. There you go.
You're hanging out. Here's one thing that I tried to figure out. I wanted to find out if this gang was doing security at the rock festival. I could never confirm that though.
I don't know how much security they would need. I guess some, but you never know.
I mean,
were these rock concerts like on the lawn?
I don't know where they took place. I don't know where they took place there, but I would imagine they were in the main area of the park.
I'm just trying to picture the most open area is probably that main, by the main entrance.
Right.
They're gonna have it in that area where you first come in, I guess.
Definitely not. There's no. But yeah, I mean, look, I know I'm going to get hit with, I'm wearing a tinfoil hat. Somebody's going to call me Geraldo or something like that. But.
Doesn't matter. Everything we do, we get criticized.
Right. It appears to me, it just feels like all of these things mesh really well together. If I knew it was a totally different gang that had no connection to Southwest Yonkers, had no connection to the Unicorn Pub, I would not be talking about this. I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I would just say, like, all right, look, Maury was wrong. Charles Lackman, who thought that this had some occult stuff prior to Maury Terry, was wrong. This girl was involved with just a bad set of people, saw something she wasn't supposed to see, probably was thought that she was going to rat them out in some way, shape, or form, and they shot and killed her.
That's probably just what happened, because, once you get arrested, she wanted to get the hell out, so something was definitely spooking her that she wanted to leave.
Well, was she driving the car?
It was her car.
I know, but was she driving it?
That I don't know. That I never was able to confirm. Mm.
Yeah, we're getting some thunder and lightning here, too.
Holy shit. Yeah, we got some here, too.
Yeah, the storm coming over.
Oh, man. I thought that was all the ammonium nitrate they stole off the train three months ago.
Yeah, I heard about that.
What those hits, Puerto Rico were probably wearing, like, Nazi stuff, because like in that 70s, that weird time with the whole macheteros and all that stuff. So it might have been just they were wearing that just to be defiant. That's
what I'm saying. I mean, even if you watch like old, biker movies like The Wild Angels or Hell's Angels on Wheels, like the guys, somebody's always wearing a swastika. There's one with
Well, that could go back to the Aryan Brotherhood and the jail system and all that other stuff.
There's a great scene. I think it's in the movie Five Easy Pieces.
Okay.
And you got Bruce Dern, who always played a biker. I think it's that movie where he's wearing an Iron Cross. No, you know what it is? I'm sorry, it's the Wild Angels. He's wearing an Iron Cross, Bruce Dern.
Right.
And this guy and Dick Miller, who's like this classic character actor guy for Roger Corman movies, he says to him, "Oh, you know, we killed people years ago that wore stuff like that." So they were just wearing it, I think, for the shock value, right, Rob? What do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Right. No, I mean, it's
but that doesn't mean they're not into it. I'm just saying.
It's definitely possible. I mean, look, yeah. the same thing is in the movie Cruising, which is about gay people, right? You would never conflate gay people with a swastika, right? Because
it's in that movie.
They're basically, you know, the antithesis of each other, right? I mean, but you know, there's a scene in an underground gay club, a leather club, where there's Nazi symbolism all over the place. You know, was it an accurate depiction of that place for that time? I don't know. I've never been to a place like that.
You know, it's interesting. It's interesting that you would say that they're the antithesis. And I think that's a normal reaction or a normal thought process. But if you look at the history of the Nazis, some of them were straight up gay. Okay. Like there's the story of the Night of the Long Knives, where the leader of the SA was wiped out. They killed a bunch of people. Okay. The leader of the SA was a known homosexual. Okay. And that's when the SA dissolved and the SS became in the forefront. But the SA were the original brown shirts. And the guy's name who escapes me, I forget his name, but he ran the SA, was known to be gay. And some of the hierarchy in the SA were all gay. So there is kind of a, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this day and age, are you really surprised when, like, you find out somebody's not
gay?
Straight?
No.
Not straight? I mean, like, no, I'm not surprised anymore.
It
doesn't bother me, but, like, I feel like when I was a kid, like, when the guy McGreevy came out, right? Well, he didn't come out, and he got, you know, he kind of got outed. He was
governor of Jersey?
Yeah, he was married to a woman, and then it came out that he had an affair with a guy. That was, like, shocking. Like, oh, how could a governor, you know, like, people were shocked by that.
That was right? In the 90s.
And that was in the 90s, right? This is 2023. I know it feels like it was a long time ago, but it really wasn't that long ago.
Did you know what happened to him years later?
No, I didn't.
McGreevy ended up being in the Episcopalian Seminary over on 9th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Okay, 9th Avenue and, like, what was it, like 20th Street, Rob, over there?
Yeah, it's around there.
There's that big seminary for Episcopalians.
Yeah.
I used to fix the phones in there, and McGreevy was in that seminary
as a seminary,
as a priest. Yeah, something like that.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, the Episcopalian Church is definitely more open to, you know, homosexuality. I know that.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know,
not knocking it.
You know who else likes to wear?
I'm just going
to
stay quiet.
Lemmy from Motorhead.
What's that?
You know that, Mike?
What?
Lemmy from Motorhead used to wear Nazi stuff because he thought he
was. Oh yeah, I know that. I know that. He had a huge Nazi collection. So did Ron Ashton from the Stooges. You know, people are just into these kinds of things. I'm not. You know, you're totally on point what you're saying, Chris. I'm just being devil's advocate and bringing it up.
No, I don't mind. I don't mind it at all. I mean, look, fact of the matter is, and I'm not trying to make anybody from the South Bronx feel bad, but you're not dealing with the most educated group of guys usually if they're in a street gang at a young age. Like, do I think that they were really opening books on Nazi occultism or, you know, really, really taking deep dives, intellectual dives into Nazism or the SS or Himmler or Hitler or any of these people? No, I don't. But I think that you could get some, if you have the right teacher or the wrong teacher, you know, spoken word can go a long way and cultures can be developed just by spoken word. You don't have to, you know.
I agree.
And to get there. I do know from news articles that they were emulating themselves off of outlaw biker gangs.
Yeah.
You know, was the Aryan Brotherhood around back then? You know, that I don't know. I don't know when that started.
I think it was.
But, you know, to me, if that's a jail, like I feel like the Aryan Brotherhood is just white guys. I don't know this.
Yeah, no, it's a different take. But, you know, it's interesting that you say with the right teacher, because we know that there were people at Untermeyer Park that were a little more advanced in the occult than maybe the average person, right?
Right. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be nice here, but I mean, I think that there were people that were definitely in the know as far as Nazi occultism and stuff like that. And I could see how, you know, people could get interested in that just by being around some of these cats. You know, the Process Church too. I mean, you know, these people were not stupid, you know?
Yeah, no, that's for sure. They all had, it seems, the more you learn about the process, it seems that it was a very educated group, a very educated bunch. And each of them were educated in a certain
specialty,
right. Or in some vertical, you know, you had a guy who knew a lot about real estate. You had a guy who, you had, you know, this guy, you know, Ken from Australia. He was
wasn't he a physicist?
He was a chemical engineer and also, you know, a student of physics. You know, these people weren't dumb by any, I mean, look, and then, you know, you got Marianne de Grimston and Robert de Grimston. I mean, they were able to start something and then get a bunch of people to move and follow them around basically the world. Like,
yeah,
I'm not saying you have to be brilliant to do that, but you can't be a moron and get people to follow you, right?
No, you gotta have it.
Jim Jones did the same thing.
At the very least, you gotta have a gift of gab to get people to want to be around you.
And yeah, right. Jim Jonestown. That guy. How many people they follow him to Guyana? I mean, to Jonestown.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother thing, and it's a story I could take a deep dive into. You know, there's an article out there about David Berkowitz's time in the army, and when he leaves, I guess Asia, or Korea rather, you know, Korea. Be more specific. He ends up in the base in Kentucky. At that time, he ends up in a medical clinic of some kind that was ran by a doctor who was very important in the MK Ultra world, in terms of developing that program and operating that program.
And all that stuff came out in the church hearings, right? Like in 76, 75. Yeah.
What's interesting about that guy though, is that he was one of the first guys to fund Jim Jones's early church in the United States.
That same doctor?
Wow. That same doctor.
Wow.
What gets even better about that doctor is that doctor ended up in Westchester County. Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to, if you want to get really crazy, that doctor had a partnership with a medical clinic that was right across the street from the Carr's residence and was a client of their answering service.
Wow. Again, just another wacky coincidence, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying the Carr's were into MK Ultra. I'm not saying that because they had a client that was ran by a guy who was involved in MK Ultra makes them guilty of anything.
No. But you know, it's just another thing to point at and say something, you know, how many coincidences do you need before you have to realize something's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, look, 6 degrees of separation. Why is it that like with 6 degrees of separation, you know, it always works when you're talking about, you know, these like, you know, the JFK assassination or MK Ultra or David Berkowitz. But like in your own personal life, it never ends up being like 6 degrees of separation to like a billionaire uncle. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, how come it never works out for me? You know what I mean?
Like, well, I know. I don't mean either.
But always when it's something negative or scary or weird, it always works. It always comes full swing, you know? You know, look, I hope that this whole thing wasn't too heavy or too confusing for everyone. But, you know, if I was a police officer investigating this crime and I had all this information at the time of the murder, I would definitely be looking at that unicorn pub and who was hanging out there.
And they never really did, right?
No, but I know that they questioned members of the gang.
Related to the Suzette Rodriguez, right? But nothing ever related to Son of Sam was the unicorn.
Nothing related to the unicorn pub. But I know that they did talk to members of this gang. And wow. You know, the case went cold. But you know, the thing is like I don't want to play defense lawyer for Maury Terry, because first off, the guy's dead. Second off, he wrote 4 books and he can, you know, his books can defend themselves, I guess, right?
Yep.
His family can defend him. But all of this shit happened, right? With or without the book. All of this stuff is true if Maury Terry's book doesn't exist.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, I mean, and that's why it's another reason why I love this one aspect of the case, because the more you look into it, the more you find connections back to some of the more interesting people in that book and in this saga that is the Son of Sam cult and David Berkowitz.
Yeah. And again, like I said in the beginning, there's nothing direct here, but it's interesting because it's on the peripherals of it all.
In actuality, I really don't think, you know, I really think that David Berkowitz is the biggest liar in the world, not Maury Terry. I really do. I think David Berkowitz is covering up something way more sinister. When you start thinking about like Jim Rothstein talking to Maury about them running kids from Times Square up to Untermeyer Park. And you start talking about John Paul Ranieri getting raped in the park as a young boy and potentially John Carr being there. And you start thinking about Crowley and how, you know, that group of people that follow him believe in sex with underage boys as a way to create magic. I think the reason why there's so many things that don't make sense is because ultimately what David Berkowitz was protecting was some sort of a child sex trafficking thing. Because later on in Maury's, you know, efforts to solve, I guess, this case, he got involved in the Eitan Patz case. Mike Codella has spoken extensively about, you know, the reporting he got on that from his snitches. And, you know, that goes back to Gadjasek and, you know, Gadjasek being a pedophile. And I don't know, man, there's just so many pedophiles in all of this and so many dots that don't connect. And I don't think it's Maury's fault. I think it's David's fault. I think David is protecting that. Now, people say David doesn't want to be considered a rat in prison. I believe that that could be true, but I really think that David Berkowitz doesn't want to be considered someone who was helping a pedophile ring operate, because that's way more
either directly or indirectly, without his total knowledge. Who knows?
At the very least, there was something with pornography in this, which now is not a big deal, but back then, gay porn was against the law, right?
Basically, yeah,
it was against the law, so it was a lot of money in that. You know, you know,
and then you're dealing with the underworld, you know, and trying to make money off that because it is illegal.
I mean, there's people that have come out and said that Roy DeMeo was involved in kiddie porn business.
Yeah, well,
you know, I mean,
well, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that that's 100% true, but that was a crazy dude, bro. You know,
yeah, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with this case at this point. You know, I don't think we'll ever have all the answers we want.
No.
You know,
and you know, you find yourself circling back and kind of going over the same thing again and again. And occasionally when you do that, you do see things in a different light. But it's really, you know, unless there's some kind of break in the case, you know, could be Berkowitz talks.
That dude, Jason Goodman, one time said that Maury was involved in a limited hangout.
Called it
a limited hangout. And, you know, I would say maybe that's true, but the crux of the conspiracy in this was more or less given to Maury by David, either directly or through the guys he was in jail with, writing Maury letters on his behalf. So if anyone was doing the limited hangout, it'd be the main source. And, you know, David has proven that he's been honest to a certain extent with some and totally dishonest with others. And, you know, it's a tough cookie to crack when, you know, you're not dealing with a consistent set of facts, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, there's just so many things, even after all these years and tons of research, that we still just don't know. You know, there's still a lot of holes in the story that don't add up. And, you know, even like this Suzette Rodriguez case, though it happened after the fact, there's some evidence there that there was occult activity going on
at Untermeyer,
which, you know, is still tied in with Son of Sam. You know, we know that Berkowitz was at Untermeyer. Okay, there's people that have seen him and in Untermeyer.
Right.
You know, other people don't want to, you know, get into that or believe that or put that forward for whatever reason. But that's a fact. And, you know, how much it had to do with it is up for grabs, but it did have something to do with it.
I don't have one doubt in my mind that David Berkowitz didn't act alone. I don't.
Me neither.
To what extent, the shooters he says were the shooters is true. You know, I have some issues with that. I have issues with Manson too. I don't think that guy came out from California to New York to shoot Christine Freund. Based on what I know about that guy. That guy's Bill Metzner. He was too much of a mover and shaker in LA at that time for him to come out here to do that hit. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know for sure that I don't know for sure that I believe I don't know who shot Voskarichian. I don't think it was David Berkowitz. I think we established that in that video.
Yeah.
You know, who that was, you know, that's, you know, depending upon who you ask, you know.
we're not gonna even speculate that. But,
right,
you know, we did a whole show on that, and I think it was pretty cut and dry by the end of the show that it probably was not Berkowitz.
Right. And unfortunately, it's a clear indication of politics affecting police work.
Yeah.
And that's another issue in this case. You know, the Brooklyn DA's office withheld information for years. Turned out that guy ended up becoming a pedophile. I mean, it's just,
you're talking about Gold from
Brooklyn. Yeah, Eugene Gold.
Eugene
Gold goes to conference, rapes another attorney's daughter, 13-year-old daughter. Like, what a dirtbag.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's all these, you know, these little things that just so many coincidences that just can't happen at the same time. There has to be a reason. There has to be something to it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. But, you know.
Well, I'm really glad you brought this. This was something I know you wanted to talk about for a while with Suzette Rodriguez. So I'm glad you brought all this forward for everybody to give a little thought as to, because people always ask, well, did things stop after Berkowitz got?
No, it didn't. And before we go, I just want to say there's other instances where people that may or may not have been affiliated with the cult ended up dying or killing themselves or dropping off the face of the earth. You know what I mean? So it's like JFK and the Biggie and Tupac murders combined. When you start to really think about the people that were alleged to be involved that either died horrible deaths or, you know, ended up in a situation where nobody ever knew where they went, you know? So,
right.
Anyway, guys, I really appreciate you letting me do this show. Thank everyone for watching.
No, I appreciate everybody watching the show as usual. If you're watching, hit subscribe and like. If you haven't done so already, leave comments. We're going to be doing another show soon, probably by July or August, the latest. And I hope you all have a nice summer. And we'll be back with more Son of Sam Chronicles.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yeah, man. Definitely be back.
All right. Bye. Take care, people.
See you. Walkway right here to my left.